You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome to Aaron Mankey's Cabinet of Curiosities, a production of iHeartRadio and Grim and Mild.
Our world is full of the unexplainable. And if history is an open book, all of these amazing tales are right there on display, just waiting for us to explore. Welcome to the Cabinet of Curiosities. Cities often seem cramped and crowded, don't they? People work and live in skyscrapers that soar over streets clogged with taxis and pedestrians. After all, in a city, you can't build out, you build up. When you think of narrow alleyways and densely packed streets, we often think of places like New York City and Chicago. But one location that isn't often talked about lies roughly 4,000 miles away, across the ocean. And that place is Paris, France. And back in 1919, one man did the impossible. He landed a plane in the middle of the City of Lights. His name was Jules Vedrine, born in France in 1881. Vedrine was a hoodlum who spent much of his youth getting in fights on the streets of Paris. But despite his hardened nature, he also grew up to become a skilled mechanic. Vedrine eventually found his way to London when he was 29 to work under actor and aviator Robert Lorraine. After 6 months, the former street urchin earned his own pilot's license and started making a name for himself all over Paris. He won or placed in a number of air races, which eventually helped him launch a political career as a socialist candidate in local elections. Although he was an adept pilot with numerous trophies on his wall, he had less luck in politics. But that didn't stop him from trying. He even used his skills as a pilot to drop propaganda over the Chamber of Deputies in Paris in 1812, the year that he ran. These skills carried him through World War I, where he ran Secret Service missions, delivering troops over enemy lines, or getting them out of harm's way. Vedrine had gone from fighting in the streets of Paris to saving the lives of his comrades in arms. Quite the journey for a young man. But the achievement for which he is best known was yet to come. Before the war had started, a contest had been announced with a grand prize of 25,000 francs to be given to the pilot who could land his plane on the roof of Paris's Galerie Lafayette department store. To do so was quite dangerous. After all, the rooftop rose only 30 meters above the Paris streets, with no room for a runway. Even the police had to step in. They saw how risky it was and issued an order forbidding anyone to try it. But Jules Vedrine wasn't exactly someone to listen to authority. He knew he could do it. After all, he'd been a World War I hero, clocking in over 1,000 hours running airborne reconnaissance missions for the French army. Landing a plane on the roof of a department store would be a piece of cake. So on January 19th of 1919, Vedrine hopped into the cockpit of his Caudron G.3, a single-engine French plane. This would have been the same plane that he'd flown during the war. Very little about the event is known today, save for a few photographs that remain. But what is clear is that Vedrine successfully landed his plane on the roof of the Galerie Lafayette. And in order to make sure that he didn't overshoot the landing, he had a team of men waiting to catch the Caudron by its wings as it touched down. And his wild plan worked. Although he won the 25,000 francs, 6 francs were deducted for landing in a restricted area of the roof and for any damage caused by the stunt. He and the plane also suffered injuries as a result. But he'd done it. Jules Vedrine had become the first person to land an airplane on top of a building. His victory was short-lived, though. A few months later, while piloting a Caudron C-23 to Rome, his engine failed and the aviator died trying to land his aircraft. Today, all that remains of the event is an engraved stone plaque on the roof of the Galerie Lafayette, bearing the face of Jules Vedrine and a description of what happened that day. And as someone who has struggled to find parking spots while going shopping myself, you have to admire how Vedrine found such a curious solution.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Alvin loved getting high, but not in the way you might think. He was born Aloysius Anthony Kelly in Hell's Kitchen, New York, on May 11th of 1893. He didn't know his parents. His mother died during childbirth and his father passed away before he was born. He was adopted by a family friend, but it was clear from a young age that Kelly had his eyes on a life outside of Hell's Kitchen. When he was 13 years old, Alvin ran away from home and signed up for work on a cargo ship. As he grew older, he took on a number of professions, including steelworker, high diver, chimney and roof repairman, boxer, and as a stunt pilot for movies. And it was his work on films that helped him make a name for himself outside of his old neighborhood of Hell's Kitchen. In January of 1924, a local movie theater hired Kelly for a publicity stunt to help sell tickets for an upcoming picture. His job? Climb to the top of a tall pole and sit on it. It was apparently something that he'd been good at since he was a boy. Kelly had climbed to the top of a pole when he was only 7 years old, at least according to one witness. Then, when he was 9, he climbed up the side of a building all by himself. But in the winter of 1924, he sat on top of a pole for over 13 hours, all to spread word about a new movie being released. Except it wasn't the movie that he wound up advertising. It was Alvin Kelly himself. He started traveling all over the country, just sitting on poles for money and attention. And the people loved him for it. Local businesses sponsored him and even hired him to advertise for them. He gained fans who would wait for him to climb down from his perch so that they would meet him afterward. But spending hours on top of a flagpole could be taxing for the average stuntman. So how did Kelly pull it off? Well, for one, he didn't eat much. He subsisted mainly on coffee and broth, which he had delivered to him using a bucket hooked to a rope and pulley. He also taught himself to nap sitting up. He would stick his thumbs into holes at the top of the pole, and when his sleeping body would list in one direction, the pain in his hands would snap him awake. Of course, staying up there for tens of hours meant that all those liquids had to go somewhere, and it wasn't like he had a porta potty on a pole next to him. Allegedly, Kelly had rigged up a tube system that ran the length of the pole to a container on the ground with which he would relieve himself into. This was better than an alternative solution that would have required spectators to carry umbrellas with them. And when he wasn't evacuating his bladder, Kelly could be seen shaving or reading the newspaper as though he were simply going about his normal day and not sitting 100 feet in the air on a narrow metal pole. Kelly quickly outdid his record of 13 hours and 13 minutes. In 1927, he sat on a pole for 147 hours in the middle of February in Kansas City, Missouri. Having spent my youth in the Midwest, I can only imagine how horrible that was. He battled wind and rain and cold, only to go even longer in Atlantic City in 1930. On that occasion, he sat on top of a pole for nearly 1,200 hours. That's 49 days. He never let the weather or discomfort sway him either. Whether it was 10 degrees out or blistering hot, he would give the people what they wanted. And apparently what they wanted to see was a man sitting on a pole. Sadly, his days of flagpole sitting came to an end in 1935, at least professionally. He was one day into an attempt to break his Atlantic City record when the police forced him to get down. After that moment, he went in, got a regular job to make ends meet. A New York Dunkin' Donuts hired him in 1939 to do headstands on the 54th floor of the Channon Building in Manhattan for National Donut Week. He performed while eating donuts and drinking coffee upside down. But soon after, the sea called him back for duty. He served during World War II as a merchant marine before returning to his old life without a penny to his name. He tried flagpole sitting again in 1952, but a stunt in Orange, Texas proved to be too much for him. He was 65 feet in the air when he suffered a series of heart attacks. They did not kill him, though, but they did force him to retire from flagpole sitting forever. Kelly went back to Hell's Kitchen to live out the rest of his days. And I do mean days. While walking down the street in his old neighborhood soon after his return, he collapsed on the sidewalk and died. He had no money and no family to claim him from the morgue. He was eventually laid to rest at Long Island National Cemetery. Alvin Shipwreck Kelly accomplished a lot during his relatively short life. He may not have been blind or been given superpowers in a freak accident, but he'll always be remembered as the original daredevil of Hell's Kitchen. I hope you've enjoyed today's guided tour of the Cabinet of Curiosities. Subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or learn more about the show by visiting curiositiespodcast.com. This show was created by me, Aaron Mankey, in partnership with How Stuff Works. I make another award-winning show called Lore, which is a podcast, book series, and television show. And you can learn all about it over at theworldoflore.com. And until next time, stay curious. Thank you.